County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for tonight's special episode of TCCP is none other than Leicestershire and former Worcestershire all-rounder George Rhodes. So George, first things first, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast tonight. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, hi Aaron, thanks for that intro and for inviting me on the podcast. I've been following it actually on Twitter with a few of my colleagues at Leicester. Some interesting podcasts, some not so interesting podcasts. Won't name names at the moment, but it's great to be here. And day's been good actually. We've been at Loughborough. We had a white ball session today as a big group. So it's gone well. Thank you.
Well, that is fantastic to hear, George. It really is. And for those who don't know, we have had so many messages, DMs on both Instagram and on Twitter wanting George to come onto the podcast. So tonight really is a pleasure. What a way to round off January. For those who don't know as well, we are recording this on the 31st of January 2022. What a way to go into the new month of February. Could not have chosen a better guest.
We've only just started.
I know, but it's been a good start, George. I must admit, start how you mean to go on, as the old proverb says, you know. But in terms of tonight's podcast then, just for the listeners out there, just to give you some context about what we're actually going to be talking about, I'm going to be chatting to George about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large chunk of the podcast will, of course, detail your county career to date with the likes of Leicestershire and Worcestershire. And then to finish off tonight's episode of the podcast, we've got some, how do we call them, interesting Twitter questions, shall we say, from some of your teammates, George. So I'll try not to laugh too much when we get to that segment, but a word of warning, there are some incredibly rogue questions in there, to say the least. So, yeah, I'll enjoy that when we get to that segment. I know, your own teammates, George. And in fact, there is a segment, there's a secret segment as well, but I'll reveal that as the podcast gets underway. So before we get into all of that good stuff then, George, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of your cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this magnificent game?
Yeah, good question. Well, I guess for me, cricket's always been in the family. My dad played for, 20 years, just under 20 years as a player, I think, for Worcestershire, and then coached for a further, I'm not too sure, maybe 14, maybe those years. I've got memories of going down New Road as a youngster and playing in the car park. And the car park, I'm sure you've been to New Road, but the car park typically sat behind the Basil D'Oliveira stand. And you could only just get a tiny strip of sort of cricket, like a pitch in there. And I've got memories of just about 6, 7, 8, going down to New Road, never watching a ball that's being bowled out on the pitch or dad playing. It was more, playing that strip of that car park all day. So that, in terms of earliest memory, that's probably it for me. And then, I suppose just sort of going through the Worcester age groups and sort of playing in the garden with the old man, really.
Well, just for those who don't know, could you just detail your family's connection to the game of cricket? Because it's not just your dad, Steve, also your grandfather as well, very much invested in a county sense, I suppose. Like, could you just give us some more context as to the Rhodes cricketing family, if you could?
Yeah, that's right. So my granddad, Bill Rhodes, William Rhodes, he played for Nottingham. I think he played for, you're probably going to correct me here. I think he played for maybe 5 or 6 years. But he played for Nottingham. He was a batter. And then dad, that's my father's father. And then dad obviously played a lot more, had a longer career than my granddad. They both kept, actually. So they both kept wicket. Dad obviously kept a lot more, kept for England eventually, I think in 93 or so, 94, after playing, you know, having some successful runs with Worcester. And then obviously I had a bit of a late sort of start, really. I mean, I think I was a bit of a late bloomer, really, in a way, actually. I probably got to about 18 and after the academy in Worcester. And we had quite a strong group, actually, at the time. We had, you know, the likes of Ed Barnard coming through, Joe Clark below, and my year was Tom Fell, Tom Curley-Cadmore, and year above was Brett D'Oliveira, or year 2 years above, Brett D'Oliveira, and Joe Leach amongst it. And it was kind of a really competitive few years in the academy. I didn't get a contract, full contract, till I was about 21, 22, despite playing a lot of second team in between sort of those years. So I kind of was a bit of a late bloomer at 21, I think. I made my debut. Obviously I'm 28 now, so the last 7 years I've been playing. But dad had a long career for Worcester particularly, and a little bit for England.
Well, this is going to be quite a profound question, potentially, George, but I would like to know the answer. Given your family's deep-rooted connection to the counter game in this country, did you ever feel the pressure of expectations almost, that you had to go into the game, or is that something you've never experienced per se?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, to a certain extent, yeah, there is that pressure. I think that, to be honest with you, though, there's more pressure on him than me. He was obviously in a position when I was coming through Worcester to make my debut as head coach. So his challenge really, I mean, it was both of us. It was difficult. I suppose it could have been difficult in a sense where if ever I did anything wrong or didn't start well, then there's the old adage of you're playing because you're dad, which I've got a hard skin about that. Since I was about 12, I copped it in the leagues with all that. So, I mean, it's something I'm used to, but I think for him as in a position of director of cricket and obviously Worcester through and through, really wanting them to do well, it was very difficult for him. So a little bit more pressure on him. I actually didn't feel it as much when I got to sort of first team cricket. It was, I think it was useful that I had to score a lot of runs in the second team, because then a lot of my teammates around me could see that it was a logical progression for me and worth, you know, deserved it in a way, so they kind of backed me. So that's always good when you've got people around you that that you know you can see, I suppose, can justify you being picked and playing. So that was, I think it was more difficult for dad, but yeah, it's always there, you know, 100%. You know, I wouldn't be lying to say it wouldn't be, you know, one of those thoughts.
I was about to say, because I just wanted to know that, because I suppose with anything, and especially in cricket, I was going to say the wider sporting sense, actually, there is always that extra weight of expectation, I think, on the person below. So, for example, let's just take Sachin Tendulkar for one example, right? Obviously, arguably the greatest batsman ever. Mm. Number one in terms of the all-time test run scoring ranks. His son, Arjun, has now got massive, massive expectations on him right from the get-go. And the fact is, it must be quite difficult for Arjun, because what is he? I think he's 19 or 20, 21 years of age, right? He's not that old at all. And yet there's all this attention, there's all this focus on him. And in a way, I kind of think, and actually, George, I want to know your thoughts on this. Do you actually think at times that is a little bit damaging?
I think it can be. I mean, at the end of the day, though, you've got someone who's seen firsthand how to be a professional player in his father and do well. So, and he's actually a very good player. Arjun is. I've seen him play. He's actually a really good player. So he'll be thrusted into that professional environment probably from a young age, rightly so, regardless of who his dad is. So, you know, there's always going to be so many pressures, I think, from going through the levels and getting to a professional player and even international player, I imagine. But there's a lot of several different variables that, you know, I feel that can really you've got to kind of master or get over in a way that to get to that next level. And he, you know, that's just one of those. I don't think it's like something that can completely halt him in his tracks. He's going to probably be the, you know, the best he can. And if he's as people want to talk about him and his dad, then so be it. That's the way I kind of see it. And I think, I guess that's the way I went about it a little bit. You know, we were very different though. You know, I was kind of a top order batter. Dad was a middle order batter keeper. You know, I sort of bowl some floaty off spin now and again as well. So I can't, we're very different in a sense. I think if I was a keeper, it might be slightly different. And interestingly, actually, I wanted to be a keeper. He never let me. He didn't let me keep. Yeah. So, which I think in now looking back is I'm glad because it gave us a little bit of a disparity between him and me. So, but I kept picking his gloves up and he kept taking them off me, saying, "You don't want to do that. It's a mug's job." You expected to catch every single ball, and as soon as you drop one, it's your fault, and you break fingers.
I can kind of relate to that. I'm not a wicketkeeper in cricket, but as a goalkeeper in football, oh my word, honestly.
Yeah.
You can play brilliantly all game. You make one mistake in like 10 or 11 matches, and you're vilified. Mm. It's an absolutely thankless task, and I suppose that is the same with keeping, but that's very, very interesting to hear then, and maybe in hindsight, having heard that, maybe there was some logic, some sound reasoning behind it, because if you are too similar, I suppose those pressures, the weight of expectation would get even greater. It'd increase even more so. So interesting to know that Steve did that during your development.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him too much credit about forward thinking there, though. It's probably just, he's just got a bad back and bad knees and broken fingers, and he's just said, don't do it. So do something else. Be a fast bowler, which I try and I was rubbish at.
I tried as well, George. Hey,
yeah.
I can relate to that. I was absolutely dreadful. And I don't want to go into the story too much, but one schools game. Oh, never, ever forget this. Never, ever forget this. I was really confident before the game. And we were doing okay at the time. And, you know, I was ready to bowl, came on to bowl. And I thought, right, let's just get through this over. You know, concede, what, 4 or 5 runs, you know, really put the screws on. Ended up conceding 5 wides. And that wasn't as in 5 wides, a foul coming off of a wide. That was 5 back-to-back-to-back-to-back wides.
Oh, and
that was the day that my career as Jimmy Anderson, unfortunately, ceased to exist. And I became a spin bowler. So who knows? Maybe it's for the best. And I will say, George, because you're also a fellow spinner, I think it is the better form of bowling. Would you agree with that? Or do you prefer seam?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's common to have these conversations, like if you could be the best at something in the world, what would you be in cricket? And not many people see past someone who can bowl rapid. You can bowl 95 mile an hour. But I think that would just be, it would just hurt too much over time. You break your back and all sorts. So yeah, I think for me, number one would be a gun left arm spinner, or maybe like a gun, like a Rashid Khan. Spin it both ways, quick, travel the world, earn loads of money. You know, that skill set is, you know, it's an art, isn't it? But, or maybe Ashwin, actually. Ashwin's quite attractive, isn't he? As a sort of, can do, he's got so many skills. And yeah, I mean, it's just conventional finger rolling for me, really. It's nothing too exciting, unfortunately. Nothing too exciting.
Well, who knows, George? I mean, there's still time before the season. Work on the camera.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've tried that and I haven't got it. I don't mind telling anyone I've not got a camera ball.
Neither have I. Do you know what's really funny as well? I tried doing, you know, the Liam Livingstone, where he bowls leg breaks and off spin. I tried that in the nets last year and one of the leg breaks ended up on the top of the net. So that's, again, my journey as a budding Shane Warne has also not gone great. I think, if anything, the cricketing gods are telling me, Aaron, stay in your lane, be an off spinner, right? That's the only thing you can do. That's the only way you're ever going to make it even to the Cotswold fourth division, right? Let alone anything beyond that. So I'm going to stick with off spin for the time being. But talking of these massive names, because let's face it, George, we're not that far into the podcast and we've already mentioned some huge names. Sachin Tendulkar, Ravi Chandranashwin, Rashid Khan in the modern game. In your most formative years in the game of cricket, aside from your dad and aside from your family influences, who in the world of cricket really stood out to you in terms of maybe idols, icons, role models. Did you have anyone in the professional game per se who you tried to emulate and model your game off of?
Yeah, interestingly, no, not really. I mean, since I was about 18, because I remember sitting down in the academy sessions and you kind of put yourself, right, this is what you're good at. And okay, who's my role model? What are they good at? Okay, how can I be, you know, match up my similarities or differences? And I never really had anyone through and through. I mean, like, I admire people at the top of the game in whatever skill. So, like, I remember you talking about to Parky on here, actually, of that Ashes over of Flintoff. And that sticks in my memory also. So, like, that's just, you know, it's the pinnacle of reverse swing, fast bowling, really, in England, I think, wasn't it? And it was just like, you know, those iconic moments inspire you, but there's no one really in every sense as a sort of top order batter who bowls off spin that I look to and think they're my role model, really. I think I like the way Ben Stokes goes about his cricket from a body language perspective. He's tough. You can chuck him in any situation and, you know, he'll fight for his life. I admire those kind of qualities. Like, they're, you know, inspire me and the way I think it suits my game a little bit. Probably not as naturally talented as most, but, you know, I'm quite analytical, but quite enjoy the, you know, those moments of like adversity, really. So I think Stokes, in a sense, that sense really, you know, inspires me. And then in terms of off spin, actually, there's nothing more perfect and poetic than Nathan Lyon's action and top spin and just everything about his conventional off spin bowling. I think it's, you know, he's obviously world class and taken probably for granted by too many, I feel, as an out and out spinner. And to do it as an off spinner in Australia is just, you know, incredible, really.
As we've seen this Ashes yet again, not for the first time with Nathan Lyon, unfortunately for us as England fans. And luckily, listeners, we're not going to get into the Ashes. We've already had our debate here on the podcast with regards to the 2021-22 Ashes, but that's interesting to hear, to be honest, George, because we don't get it often. I mean, we do it sometimes. We get people who come on and they say we don't have role models or influences, but I'm guessing yours have come at a later stage then. And you mentioned about those moments, and that was a good conversation with Parky. I must admit, all about the 2005 Ashes, that seems to pop up every single podcast, right? That iconic series. I'm beginning to think the Counter Cricket podcast should be rebranded to the 2005 Ashes podcast. We bring it up that many times.
Yeah.
In terms of those iconic moments, what about one of those? Is there one real standout moment, a highlight from those formative years that you can kind of pick up on and say that was a moment which inspired me?
I mean, I won't say that moment but that did, you know, inspire me. I think more recently, actually, not necessarily inspired me when I was younger, but that, the way Stokes played, I think, in the World Cup final, that super over, it was just incredible. Like, I think that has been the pinnacle of cricket in England in the most recent years, 100%. And there's no doubt that there's people that are just coming out of the woodwork, like my friends that all of a sudden love cricket, who hated it for, you know, forever. So it's almost like it's inspired a new generation of cricketers. And I was genuinely running around the living room, and I don't watch much cricket. I'm not really, you know, I admire the battle, like the tactics, or, you know, the close games. And I like to see, you know, how players are playing in certain different situations and things like that. I quite like that sort of chess game of a cricket match. But that super over, I lost it, completely lost it. And I was running around. But that was really inspiring, and it's going to inspire, you know, so many people. And to be fair, the 100, coming on to the 100 as well, like, that's almost inspired me. And I don't really play a great deal of T20 cricket as a batter particularly. I have done, but you know, it's sort of a great spectacle for the next generation, I suppose, supporters and players.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when we think of cricket in recent times, I mean, I'm talking the last 22 years, I suppose, now, so since the start of the the new millennium, we have had those almost watershed moments, haven't we? When a new generation has been inspired. I think of the 2005 Ashes. That was massive, you know, with the open top bus parade in London. I can't say I remember that though. And I can't lie to myself on the podcast. I was just too young. My first series was 2009. So it was a good series win. And we had the Great Escaping Card, if that was the first ever live game of cricket I watched on TV from an English perspective. Beforehand, I'd been watching the IPL. But that was a good series. And then 2019, that World Cup, I've had the same experience with my friends. You know, beforehand, I had one friend who I'd go to Warwickshire with religiously, right? Season in, season out. All of a sudden, flash forward to it's 2021. I've got double digits now. The number of people, I'm actually having to turn people down at times for tickets. It's absolutely, it's crazy. I mean, I won't have to this year because fortunately at Warwickshire, we don't have a restricted capacity for this season. So they're more than welcome to come on board this year. But it's mental. It's absolutely incredible. And again, it's all about inspiring a generation, bringing up that new crop of cricket talent in this country. And yeah, they're moments which live on forever. I mean, 2005, that was what, 17 years ago now? And we still talk about
it. That's crazy. Yeah. That is crazy to think it's 17 years.
Doesn't feel like it, does it?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm 28 now, and that feels like it's flown by. But 17 years is actually remarkable. I remember it so vividly as well.
Well, in fact, George, because we're on the topic, before we get into the Worcestershire and Leicestershire conversation, we do have to bring up the Ashes, right? In terms of that series, what kind of things can you remember? And in fact, on that final day, when those bales were lifted off of the Oval, where were you?
Well, I can't remember where I was. Actually, that's one thing I can't remember where I was. I remember, though, that whole series, it's crazy to think it. I went round to a fellow teammate's house. And I remember we were that inspired at the time. And we played about 5 hours a day in his house. We had a big sort of hallway, and we'd have a big screen with the Ashes on in the front room. And we'd never planned this. You know, it wasn't something that, I think we were just, I don't know why, like, at the time, but we'd play 5 hours of cricket, indoor cricket, and watch the Ashes. And everyone now, including my team at Leicester, can be like, why are you saying this story? You badger, basically. But, that completely encapsulated the, I think it just caught, for me, it just really, but there's all the family ties and all these sort of things where you're immersed in cricket and you can't really get away from it, and you talk it with your parents or friends, or and then you know training with Pathway and all these sort of things and granddad. But at the time, it was that sort of, I remember a week vividly, and I thought, yeah, this is me, this is what I want to do. And that was the first time I thought, this is definitely what I want to do. Well, I want to be, you know, I want to be as good as I can really at this.
That's a really nice story, George.
Yeah, penny drop kind of moment where I was like, yeah, let's try it, let's do it.
That's really, really nice to hear. Because that's a question, actually, we do pose from time to time on the podcast. When was the moment that cricket really clicked? And, you know, you wanted to really become a professional cricketer. I'm guessing it was that moment then. And by the way, that sounds like an absolute dream, 5 hours of cricket a day. I'll take that. Absolutely. I mean, that sounds like absolute perfection, but that's a really, really nice story. And again, what a series, iconic, and one which we're talking about 17 years from when it happened. We'll be talking about it from many, many more years to come. I've absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever. But from those formative years, George, with the 2005 Ashes, with the family connections as well, you alluded to beforehand, the age group cricket at Worcestershire with some excellent players. Might I just add, I mean, we've had Ed Barnard on the podcast, really interesting bloke, and had a fantastic season in 2021. So I just thought I'd give him a bit of a shout out on tonight's podcast. Big up to Ed Barnard. But I have to ask, George, what can you remember from your Worcestershire debut? What can you remember from the day, the emotions connected with finally stepping out onto that field? You mentioned all those years beforehand, playing cricket in the New Road car park. What did it mean for you to step out on that field and represents Worcestershire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, it was incredible. It was It was a very nerve-wracking day, I'm going to be honest. It was, so I was in the one-day squad for a few games, and we were travelling to up to, we played at Headingley, and it happened to be a Sky game, so it was a one-day game. And I didn't think I'd play. I'd just been running drinks on as normal, really, for helping out, because I'm half deep, well... Usually I just got drinks due because I'm a half decent fielder. I'm young and enthusiastic, but he's never going to play. He's just going to, you know, we'll lug him around, and if anyone gets injured, he can field and things like that. So, but it got closer and closer to me playing. Because I kind of did well, and I remember Dad was a nervous wreck. He was an absolute nervous wreck, and no one would have noticed apart from me as well. So you wouldn't really have could tell. But it looked like a spinning wicket, basically. And we had Dolly as a frontline spinner. We didn't really have a second spinner, but Mitch obviously did a great job with pace off. So the call was made. I was, you're going to play today. I can't remember who told me. I think it was Mitch. And I thought, oh, really? Right. Jeez, like Sky cameras here. Wasn't really prepared to play. But I've been bowling well, really. And yeah, and Dad just said, good luck, mate, I think. Can't remember, but he said, good luck, mate. You know, you've done well to get here, and probably thought, don't cock it up. But he was, and it was, I remember, actually, the most nerve-wracking part was fielding, funny enough. Because I think once I was sort of bowling in the moment, you never notice anything. I didn't even notice the crowd. It was really the 22 yards and whoever was batting and the job I needed to do. And then at the end of the over, I remember thinking, wow, this is pretty scary now. You can see cameras around, and I was just thinking, just don't fall over one. Don't let one through your legs. Whatever you do, don't hit the ball to me in the air, that kind of stuff. And but luckily I didn't actually get the ball much, but I bowled quite nicely and pretty tight, and got a couple of wickets for, I don't know, not too many. And I think that was a big moment of relief, really. Not just personally, but, I guess lads around me and Dad. And it was just it was a surreal moment, of, you know, a memory that I'll hold close. And then luckily from there, I played the another 4-day game, I think it was a week later. And then I was sort of amongst it, in and out of the team in different roles, but I was that's where it kind of kicked off for me.
It most certainly did. And you mentioned there a couple of wickets. In fact, I'll give you your figures from the day, 2 for 34 from 10 overs. That's not bad at all. 3.4 economy rate. That's pretty shrewd, that. I have to ask, George, can you remember your first two wickets in county cricket?
Yes, I do. It was Lees. He probably... I accidentally hit a stone or something and turned one that straightened, because he was playing quite nicely, and I think he just played a cross one, really. So that was LBW, and then Will Rhodes again. I might have hit the same stone, it just held up a bit, and he chipped one back to me off the leading edge, really. I think that was right. Is that right?
Spot on.
Yeah.
Absolutely spot on. I also found it weird that you did dismiss a fellow Rhodes, considering he was at the time the only other Rhodes in the county circuit. So just a nice piece of trivia there. Rhodes dismissed Rhodes.
Yeah, that's right. Have you had him on the podcast yet?
We haven't. We're going to, though. We are going to get him on, because obviously as a Warwickshire fan, I need to talk about the championship with him. But
absolutely, yeah. He's a good man.
He is indeed. He's been an absolutely fantastic addition to Warwickshire County Cricket Club. And again, listeners, we're going to try our best. We will get Rhodes on before the season.
That's probably what all those messages were for, trying to get me on. They just got mixed up.
No, it wasn't, George. Trust me, when you've had months and months and months of people saying, get George Rhodes on, and Scott Steele, who we'll mention in due course, mentioning get Rodog on, which is an interesting...
Rodog.
That's an interesting...
I think he just struggles to spell. He must have took his spell check off.
He's a funny character, though, Scott. Again, we'll touch upon Scott in due course in the podcast. We are going to get him back on at some point as well. But in terms of from that debut then, George, in retrospect, I suppose, how would you describe your time at New Road?
It was a bit fragmented, really. I mean, it was So I think I made my debut as sort of a second spinner in white ball cricket, and then played as a spinner as well in second spinner in red ball cricket. I think I batted six or seven, maybe seven or eight, maybe. I can't quite remember, against Northants. That was my championship debut. And the pitch, yeah, was a used pitch. And I think they must have dropped a bowler, I'm pretty sure, to play a second spinner. So I kind of found myself in that role of doing a kind of job as a second spinner and batting, I suppose, middle order-ish, wherever kind of we needed me. And then all of a sudden, I think Dolly got injured, I'm pretty sure, in the next Champo game. And my second game, I think it was my second game, they were like, right, you're going to open the batting. So I was like, okay, that's fine, because I've been doing a lot of opening in the second team, I think, since I was, well, probably 18. So I've done a few years of opening in the second team. And so I was opening the batting. It was against Kent. And I managed to get, I got 11 off over 100 balls in the first innings. And I know it's incredible. And I remember just thinking, I'm not getting out to Darren Stevens at the time. And I just didn't play a shot at all for 100 balls. I remember, I can't remember who was saying, like Mace, maybe Matt Mason, or bowling coach at the time, or it might have even been Dad. Or they said, right, you should play a few shots next innings, like as in, you know, stop blocking out of it. Anyway, because I'd already banked those 100 balls, I was actually seeing all right. So I managed to get 50 second innings. And then I kind of found myself in a more of a batter's role, actually. So I sort of transitioned, but I think I batted three or opened or everywhere, really. And then I think as a consequence to that, my kind of role was a bit of a stopgap in the team. So I kind of, if someone needed a... if we needed a second spinner, then like I could try and do that, do a job there. Or if we needed a batter up the order, I kind of did a job there. But I think as a result, like, I kind of lost a little bit of role identity. I didn't really maximize what I was probably good at. And I think over time, even only recently, to be honest, I've realized what I've actually, my real strengths in the county game and the kind of player that I want to be and what I can bring to the team, rather than being this stopgap bits and pieces kind of player who he can be 12th man. And if anything goes wrong, at least we've got all bases covered. Or, like I said before, I think that was really my journey through Worcester. And even through white ball cricket, to be honest, I bowled a lot and more so than I batted, and as my main role. And one day cricket, I ended up batting middle order, I think about four, and opened in a couple. And it's been an interesting journey for Worcester. I feel like I've done a lot of things and not quite jack of all trades, master of none, I think they call it, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I've said that about my cricketing knowledge at times, to be honest. Seems to have all the different hands in the pies. But before we touch upon the Worcestershire journey again, I just want to backtrack slightly, because you mentioned about the sense of identity in county cricket. I just wanted to pick up the conversation there, if I may. What do you think your current niche at Leicestershire is then? Because you mentioned about being I don't like using the term, but quote-unquote bits and pieces player. I can't stand that term, to be honest, but a role player, someone who can be flexible in and around the team environment. Where do you see yourself now in 2022 as we go ahead to the new season? What is the niche that George Rhodes fills in a Fox's shirt?
Yeah, well, I think the niche is probably not the right word, because I think being, like you said, being adaptable and flexible is really important, especially in the modern game. But I think to have a strong, clear knowledge of your role that's backed up by your strengths is probably what I didn't have as much this year. And I think for me, it is at the top order in Red Bull cricket. I think I've done enough practice there over the years. I quite like, I think, the attributes that I suppose elicit that role. So things like the longer format generally is probably my preferred format anyway, but things that, how are they going to get me out? Or this is this open bowler, he does this usually and he's got this ball. And okay, well, maybe I need to tinker with this a little bit, or watch out for that. And let's get through this period. Let's, you know, now's time to cash in, or those kind of adaptability, like within the game, really like interests me. And I think that's actually probably one of my strengths is that I do enjoy that. And I look for those moments where we can, you know, assess what we're playing against or on. And for me, the top order, I think technically just suited me a little bit. I'm not someone who can bully the ball anywhere as a middle order batter might. Like, for example, Akers is just naturally, you know, naturally times the pants off everything, hits the ball hard, excellent against spin, sweeps well. It's not something that I've had as a out and out strength at all. So I think my game is, I think I finished 2021 at batting three for Leicester. So, you know, and found a little of comfort there really in that role, and it suited me, and really it's probably been suited me over the last sort of 6 years, but I've been shot around everywhere really. So I think for me, yeah, Red Bull cricket at the top of the order is something that, that does suit me. I enjoy the challenge of it. It's not easy at times, especially when, you know, you're facing someone like Darren Stevens, for example, in England. It's very difficult, but it's very rewarding, I think. It's very rewarding. And then white ball, I think, like, it is a little bit with the ball, to be honest. Middle order is kind of where I found myself, and I'm quite happy there with the way I can play in one-day cricket. And, you know, I enjoy fielding. I'm one of the rare individuals who actually enjoys it, to be honest, unless we're fielding for 2 days. But other than that, I do enjoy fielding. So, you know, that's something that I feel like I can bring to one-day cricket a little bit. And if I can do a job with the ball and in the middle order, then perfect. That's really where I am at the moment, stage of career, I suppose.
Well, tell you what, George, I respect that. There's very much a clear-cut clarity when it comes to your identity, I suppose, now, in the county circuit, which I suppose you didn't have beforehand in Worcestershire colours, but that's now coming into game in a Leicestershire shirt. It's interesting you mentioned there about fielding. I love my fielding as well. Fielding, in particular, in the limited overs format, as we all know, is so, so important. Saving one or two runs could determine the outcome of a game. It really is that important. And it's a very old adage, I understand this, but in the game of cricket, where do you spend the majority of your time? In the field. You don't spend it at the crease. You don't spend it bowling. The vast majority of your time is out in the field. Enjoy it. You know, be energetic, be that live wire. Actively change the outcome of a game. I mean, it's a fascinating avenue, I think, of the game of cricket. I absolutely love fielding. I mean, I love watching the likes of Ben Stokes, Jadeja, Shakib Alhassan is another one. In the English game, of course, George Garton is a gun fielder in county cricket. It's a good facet of the game. And again, just for any young cricketers out there, something to model your game off of and take pride in, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, we talk about, you know, how always have two strings to your bow, really. Or that's something that I've always tried to improve is my bowling and my second string, really. But people forget about fielding. And I feel like it's as sports science, strength and conditioning, nutrition, as everything gets more professional, which it does naturally in the professional game, it's only a matter of time until cricket catches up a little bit more with fielding. And you know, we've been lucky at Leicester. We've done a little bit of work. We had a baseball coach in, and that was brilliant. And if you look at baseball fielding, and granted they get picked really if they're good, whereas in cricket it's slightly different. You know, it's you bat well, you bowl well, you get picked, and then your fielding is something that you need to be good at, but who cares really? It's not a massive, you're not going to influence the game probably as much as with the bat of the ball. But really interesting, because back to the baseball point is, I feel like it's only a matter of time until we fielding catches up, like those other facets of, you know, strength and conditioning and nutrition and every other professional, growing professional sort of addition to the cricket as we know it at the moment. I think fielding, if any youngsters out there, it is going to be more and more important as the game gets even more professional. And also something you might get found out a little bit, actually. So that's one thing I'd always encourage is to, like you said, you spend so much time out there. You know, why not be good at it? Because people will remember it, I think, more and more so over the next few years.
Exactly. Could not have articulated that much better myself, to be honest, George. And again, any young up-and-coming cricketers, take it on board. You know, it's an exciting avenue of the game. It really is. Just look at boundary catches, for example, in the modern game. I mean, if you go back, 40, 50 years, you might see a couple. But the amount of times we're now seeing these outrageous, almost superhuman efforts on the boundary to take match-winning catches or just saving, three or five runs. Staggering. And again, a very, very interesting facet of the game, which, again, here on the podcast, we do delve very, very deep into. But going back onto the conversation about Worcestershire, George, before we talk about Leicestershire, we talk about the here and now. I did just have one final, I suppose, a pertinent question about your time at New Road. In hindsight, were you satisfied with how your career at New Road went from a playing perspective? I know that's a tough question, so feel free to answer that however you like. But in hindsight, do you think, or do you almost wish that things would have gone a little bit different at your boyhood club?
I'd probably say no. I mean, the obvious answer to me is I would love to have done better. And, you know, I've had enough opportunity at Worcester there are frustrations as to underperforming, really. But, you know, there's some real fond memories of times where I've done well. There's, you know, I got my first 100, for example, at Worcester. But yeah, there are definitely some frustrations, but I would not be the player I am now without the way things would have gone in my playing career at Worcester. You know, I've learned so much, probably later than most, actually, I feel. But, you know, it kind of, it builds that sort of baseline as to what my now game is modelled on. So I wouldn't change any of it at all. But yeah, you know, I think I'm a little bit of a perfectionist at heart, really. So any failure for me, I'm probably overly diligent to try and work out or work harder to improve. And at times that's been my downfall, really. But there's, you know, there's no doubt that there's sort of a lot of lessons that I've learned throughout my Worcester career and more Leicester career as well, like constantly, you know, learning. But I wouldn't change it. But granted, you know, you always want to do as well as you can. And I'd love to have done better for Worcester at times. But, you know, like I said, there are times where, you know, I've got some fond memories and have done relatively well, particularly for the team in a situation where, you know, needed to, I don't know, do a job for the team. There's little periods where you get dodgy 20s and try and sort of stem momentum in Red Bull cricket or those. I've had a lot of sort of moments at Worcester where you do a lot of the hard work and you probably don't get the rewards and you feel like they're coming. These rewards are coming. That 100 is the next match. You know, you'll get there. And at times, didn't get there, you know. So there's a few of those moments, but like I said, I wouldn't change it. And it's a family club for me. It's something I knew nothing else really at the time growing up, and obviously the links with Dad and his career there. So you know, obviously a special place for me growing up. And you know, I'm in contact with a lot of players there who almost, like I said, you sort of build through the academy. You played a lot of cricket with. It's always a special place. But without its frustrations, I think I wouldn't change a thing.
Well, I respect that, George. And I'm not being funny. You know, you live the dream. You got to play for your boyhood club. That's something that myself, many other, not just fans and, you know, decent cricketers ever get the chance to say. It's an immense honour and a privilege to represent your boyhood club, and you did it. You've been there, you've done it. You scored a century as well, which was absolutely fantastic. Might I just add, that was against Yorkshire, if I'm not mistaken.
That was against Yorkshire. That was a funny one. I think Mitch got injured within the last 10 minutes before the toss as well. So I wasn't playing. And I managed to just, he said, right, you're actually playing today. I said, oh, okay. So I had 10 minutes before the toss and And that, yeah, I ended up batting four because Mitch was batting four. But I was just going to say, one of my fonder memories actually is, you know, you're a Warwickshire fan, is playing against Birmingham in T20, especially at New Road. I've never played in the T20 actually at Warwickshire. I don't think. I'm pretty sure I haven't. But the atmosphere in those games is incredible. Warwickshire, Worcester, especially at New Road, because it's small, it's pretty close. You know, it's not a huge stadium. But I think to be fair, Warwickshire get more fans in than Worcester. And you know about it on the boundary as well.
Yeah, it's a good derby. Like, the thing that I always say about the Bears versus Pears derby, right, it might not be the biggest in the country, like the Roses match or the London derby between Surrey and Middlesex. But, you know, for that time, for that match, you are rivals and there's an intense competition. But you know what? Afterwards, everyone's absolutely fine with one another. It's not a bitter rivalry. It's not one which is filled with intense hatred. Like, I've been to New Road. I went in 2019. I'm not sure if you remember the game, George, but loads of rain, really dark. It was like 5 o'clock in Worcester, half five. It was meant to start. And it looked like the apocalypse above. Like, it was absolutely pelting it down with rain, really dark. There's no floodlights at New Road. So it's like, oh, goodness me, there's going to be no cricket on here. And there wasn't in the end. But the thing I'll never, ever forget from that game was some bloke on the boundary hopped over the fence and did a belly slide over the cover. And the stewards thought about going in and chasing after him. They heard the crowd go, hey, like that. And they let him go. And he just went back to his seat. He was absolutely soaking wet. But again, like, I was there, Birmingham Bears shirt, as we're known in the T20, they are Warwickshire for me, as a Warwickshire boy, with a Warwickshire flag. And I had absolutely no issues whatsoever with the fans. So again, it's a good derby. It's one which we all look forward to, but there's no rubbish off the field. And that's what I can respect about Worcestershire.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
100%. But from those days at New Road, then, George, new horizons, you know, greener pastures, as they say, not to sound too cliche. That's a ground called Grace Road in Leicestershire, a ground which, again, I've got fantastic memories of in 2019, thanks to Colin Ackerman. Taking 7 for 18. That was a good journey.
Oh, yeah. So were you there? Were you there at the time?
I was there, George. I'll tell you what as well. You know, on the way back, England were playing Switzerland at the King Power, stuck in a load of traffic. So you can imagine already, I'm not in the greatest of moods, right? I'm not ridiculously angry and anything like that, but I'm severely disappointed because we were on a losing streak at that point as well. And I've just seen Colin Ackerman with his off-spin, part-time off-spinner, take world record figures on the Sky Sports cameras as well. And then we got stuck in a load of traffic. I need to go back this summer, you know, just for some closure. That was the last time I went to Grace Road.
You need to get yourself back, I think. I remember it also, Jeetan Patel was, I remember, because I was watching it, and Jeetan Patel was the last wicket, I'm pretty sure.
Yes,
and I thought, what are you doing as a fellow off-spinner? Like, gifting him the world record.
To be fair, maybe Jeet just felt charitable. You know, if anyone was going to have the world record, have it be a fellow off-spinner. And to be fair, against an off-spinner, let's be honest, right? Whether you're an off-spinner or not, what's your first instinct? Smack them. Especially if you're a right-hander. You know,
I've been on the receiving end of many of them.
As have I. Apart from I'm at different levels, so that makes it a lot more embarrassing. I've got like a 50-year-old called Barry smacking me into the car park after bowling some absolute filth. But in terms of Grace Road as a ground, I mean, we went a bit off topic there, to be honest, George, apologies. But in terms of Leicestershire as a club, in terms of Grace Road, and again, a club which is very much community orientated, everybody at Grace Road seems to know one another. What were your first impressions of Leicestershire County Cricket Club?
Yeah, well, it was difficult if you meant like sort of COVID hit mid-winter, really. It was February, my first winter, I think it was. So that was difficult because for me, I was still travelling from Worcester, so it was very hard to settle in, especially with the group of players at the time. Obviously, having spent 2 years now, I think we're mates, so I've got a few mates there. No, but settling in was difficult because of COVID, really. Lots of protocols, as it was everywhere. But really, I couldn't have felt more at home. They were brilliant. Nico was brilliant. He is brilliant, and he... You know, he's really one to, as you know, he's so enthusiastic, welcoming. We'll do anything for you, really. If you ask to, you know, if you want to hit 100 balls at 7:30, he'll be there. Which was kind of really nice, I suppose, for me. And I, someone who likes to probably top up on a bit of quantity now and again, to have a head coach in Paul Nixon who's so enthusiastic about helping and encouraging people to do so, was great. And then, yeah, I mean, once I moved up here now, obviously I live here now, and COVID slowly departed a little bit and we were training a lot more. Yeah, it was brilliant. Settling in was very similar feel actually to Worcester. Like you said, it is quite family. There's like a family feel, closely run, good group of lads. I mean, the majority now are living in Leicester, but I think at the time of the first year, a lot were sort of dotted everywhere. We've got so many lankies. It's too much. Two's too many. And now we've got a Yorkie and Parnsy. So it's just, but like, I suppose now that everyone, we've got this like little community around Leicester and lads are, you know, not too far away. It feels a lot like Worcester. Worcester's obviously tiny. So everyone kind of lives within a 20-minute walk, I suppose. But yeah, it's some very similar feel to Worcester.
I thought you might say that. And I have to just say, I have to preface this by saying Leicestershire, big up to Leicestershire County Cricket Club. They've been so helpful to us as a podcast in so, so many ways, you know, plugging the podcast, obviously appearing. And George, thanks again for coming on tonight. I cannot say enough good things about that club at the moment. Absolutely fantastic. Got a great rebuild. That renewed sense of optimism as well. I will say this about Leicestershire as a club, right? In the mid to late 2010s, things just seemed to be stagnating. Things were going in completely the wrong direction. The club didn't really have that sense of hope and optimism to build a new future. And all of a sudden, since 2020, there is this new energy, enthusiasm, optimism. There's a real sense of identity at the club, and it's fantastic to see. It really is. So big up to Leicestershire. Big up to the Leicestershire boys as well. We've had a number of them on the podcast. Every single one of them has been an absolute delight. So I just had to get that in there. I cannot thank Leicestershire enough for all of the support.
I completely agree with all of that. I mean, we've got it that since 2020, right? There's a real nice feel around the club. I think we've, you know, made a few appointments that can only be said is so positive in the last year or two, and influential and inspiring as well. You know, we've got a new director of cricket, which is new for the club. The CEO is very active and, you know, he's driving the club forward, you know, on his own. And there's a real nice group of players now that I think are just starting to learn their way. Obviously, we're very young. We've got, you know, no bones about it at all. We're not where we want to be in terms of performances, but we are actually, there is a feel that, you know, we are driving each other to get better and better. And we're kind of seeing that in glimpses now. And it is exciting. I think there will be a very nice future for Leicester and particularly some of the individuals that we've got at the moment. They're pretty exciting players, but you know, there's a lot of work to do on the field as well. We start winning more, and I think that will come because, like I said, everyone is still young and learning the trade a little bit, but we've got a nice mix, and hopefully with a good few overseas, that always helps. So yeah, just echoing what you said there, really, there is a nice feeling. It feels like it's, you know, the club's going in the right direction.
100%. Obviously echo that sentiment, because I love the rebuild. Genuinely, I've said this all the way back since 2020 here on the podcast. Yes, the results might not reflect it just yet, but it's about putting in the foundation, the building blocks for the future. And the future of this club looks incredibly, incredibly bright. And you mentioned about the overseas. I think I can guess who the next overseas signing is, judging by his tattoo sleeve. So I'm not going to spoil that for the Leicestershire fans. But already bringing in the likes of Naveen Al-Haq and Ramanullah Gurbaz. Do you know, I had a chat with Dan Weston ages ago about Ramanullah. So it's good to see him in county cricket. Big up to Dan Weston for getting that across the line as well. It's brilliant to see because, as I said, Leicestershire, I didn't like seeing what happened to the club. It was a club in decline. It was a club which, to be honest as well, had almost fallen out of love with its community, with its fan base. And all of a sudden, there is just this real togetherness. There's this optimism, hope, enthusiasm. I'm absolutely delighted. and long may it continue, might I just say as well, because I do like Leicester as a club. They're an absolutely fantastic county here in England and Wales. And talking of Leicestershire then, George, before we get on to the Twitter questions from your teammates, which again, I'm already laughing at because I've just had a look at one of them. That was a mistake.
But in there's another way to lose viewers, honestly. Didn't listen to them.
In terms of the question about 2021, really, because we've alluded to it beforehand, maybe from the club's perspective, a little bit underwhelming, in particular in the Royal London One Day Cup and the T20 Blast. You did compete in the Championship, though, taking Surrey all the way to that final round. So you do have to give a lot of credit to the club there in the group stage, I suppose, in what was a very, very tough group in Group 2. But in terms of your personal season in 2021, George, how would you go about describing it and putting it into your own words?
Yeah, well, I mean, at the start, I only played... firstly, it was a big year for me in a sense where I feel like I grew a lot as a player. That, like we talked about, all those sort of different identities I had and different roles as a player. And I think over the 2019-20 winter, I kind of solidified what exactly my identity was. And I was very close to playing at the start of the year. And luckily for us, actually, Sam Evans and we were three or four of us were competing to open and they went with Sam and Haas, and they obviously had a great year and Sam played really well. So it was really nice to see, you know, someone like that do really well and Haas again. And I think it just so happened that I didn't really play a great deal of Championship cricket. Captained a lot of second team games and played a lot of second team and dibbed all right and eventually, you know, got the call, I think it was four or five games, the last four or five Champo games, and to bat three, really. I think Marcus went home, Marcus Harris, so it opened up a window for me and luckily finished well there. And then in terms of one day cricket, I again had that sort of role with the ball. I bowled a lot more and batted four, really, a little bit up and down the order here and there, four and five, three, but it was a little bit frustrating for me, really. I went in to the one day comp in sort of good form, really, with the bat, but never quite found ways to get out now and again, especially early on, that just some strange ways, some just silly little dismissals. And you know, before I know it, I had one good knock against Derby in a chase, but the comp was, you know, just other than a few contributions, there was no real big scores there and the comp was finished. But I mean, a lot of towards the mid and end of the one day comp, I bowled a lot more. And it, like you said, it was probably frustrating, that one day comp. We missed out with Parky and Akers, but other teams missed six or seven, you know. They're very valuable one day cricketers for Leicester, you know, and successful one day cricketers for Leicester in that one day comp. And even with the likes of, as we can see now, how talented he is, Rahane Ahmed, who's playing and doing really well for England in the 19s. We and Marcus Harris as well, and Hilly obviously smashing it like the whole summer and great Nick, that we thought we had a really, really good chance. I think there was one or two games that I can't remember who we won. I think at Northants and we missed out by a point. You probably get this right, I'm not too sure. And it was so close. And I suppose we played some good cricket, but at times we didn't win games we should have. And I don't know, it was a little bit underwhelming, but there were so many positives. You know, Rahane, like I said, just mentioned, he made his debut really and was looking very good. Hilly in great form. And so there were a lot of positives, and I think it's only ever going to be a good experience for a lot of those players in that one day team next year. We competed well, but ultimately we ended up in that third division, as it were, at the time. And it was us and Worcester, I think, who were pushing for the top. The second place, was it? I can't even remember, but it was. And we, you know, so we showed a lot of fight and good glimpses, but I think there was just slight inconsistencies that you get from younger teams, really, that I think over the next year or two, with a bit more experience, hopefully we'll iron those out and win those games or draw those games. So there's a lot of positives. We've got a way to go. We all know that. And it's, all the lads in high spirits and working hard. So, and with enough enthusiasm and hard work and experience, nestled amongst the team, I think we will get there and we'll improve.
I think you will as well, to be honest. As I said, I keep on bringing it up, but I love the rebuild. I really do love the blend of youth and experience at Leicestershire. And you are a young group. Let's face it. I mean, even mentioning Rian, we mention him as though he's this almost seasoned county veteran. He's only played in his first season. I mean, he's so impressive. I saw him at Edgbaston in what was one of the games of the season for me as a Warwickshire fan. Leicestershire probably should have won that game as a result of Rishi
Patel. That game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, that as well. That chase, Rishi played really well. He got a good 100. And I think in hindsight, that game, we 100% should have chased it down. I think we only needed to run a ball for the last, 12 overs, mm-hmm. I'm guessing. I can't remember exactly. And with plenty of wickets in the shed. But it was a hybrid wicket, and it was slightly, there was a bit in it which made it slightly difficult to start without making excuses. We needed someone in, to really get us over the line, and no doubt we should have won. And it was one of those where you just think, oh, how have we missed out on that game? And those valuable points, obviously, in the terms of the whole comp really did hurt us. But credit to Warwickshire, actually, they played quite nicely. And Will Rose obviously bowled really well at the death. So there's your man.
He most certainly did. As did a former guest here on the podcast, one of our first ever guests, an OG of TCCP, Mr. George Garrett. He was fantastic as well, as was Manraj Johal. But the key thing for Leicestershire, and again, you look at a game like that, and at the time, it's frustrating, it's disappointing, but you've just mentioned it right there, George. You know now about that hybrid wicket. It's a case of if you're in, you have to be in there for the long term. It's no good throwing away your wicket, because if someone new does come in, it's going to be a lot more difficult. That's part of the learning process with this Foxes outfit. So you'll have games like that. Of course you will. But again, it's life. We have hardships. We have excellent days. We have tough days. It's about finding that consistency. And again, with time, with experience under the belts, I back Leicestershire to become a much better side, heading not just into this season, but the seasons beyond as well. Mm. And talking of the people at Leicestershire then, I say there's no better time than the present to get on with these Twitter questions, because, George, they are interesting, to say the least. So we'll start with a series.
What, the people who have suggested them, or the questions themselves?
The questions themselves. But I must say, shout out to Jay Shankar. He's provided us with some excellent questions so far here on the podcast. And his one is a serious question before we get into your Foxes teammates questions. And the question from Jay is, what's the biggest lesson that you've learned from Paul Nixon, your head coach? You've mentioned already the influence that he's had, but has he offered you any almost life advice, I suppose, or cricketing advice, which has really stuck with you to date?
Nico brings several things to the table that have helped me personally. But I think just one thing that you can always rely on Nico is just him backing you. And it is such a simple thing. I could say anything technically, or, getting forward, maybe a trigger movement, which we've worked on a lot. But one thing is genuinely the backing that you get from him. He all he wants is people, lads in Leicester shirts to do well. And Leicester to do well. And, it's really fresh that, as you know, like, it's very difficult at times, professional cricket, especially if you've strung a few average scores, or you're not quite feeling right today and your trigger's a bit late, or you're not quite picking the ball up, and you've always got Nico to back you. So really for me, it's just that support really as a head coach and someone who's obviously well respected at the club and in the game, really.
He most certainly is. I always liken him to Leicestershire's version of Gus Fraser. He's Mr. Leicestershire in every single sense of the word. Excellent head coach. I support the Jamaica Talawars in the CPL, for those who don't know. He was a brilliant coach for Jamaica. So got nothing but respect for Paul Nixon. He's an absolute legend in the East Midlands. But that was the serious question, George. Now to go on to the not so serious questions. I'm going to try not to laugh, listeners, right? That's my challenge for tonight with some of these questions. We'll start with the ones from Scott. Okay, Scott, who we alluded to beforehand earlier in the podcast. And his first one, George, is your top three films. What are your favourite ever films, per se?
He's asked that question.
He has.
He must have had help typing that, because I'm not sure he can spell. So, top three films. Okay, easy. The Notebook's up there. Love it. Actually, there's one that the Guy Ritchie that I've watched recently. I've watched Snatch, but The Gentleman's brilliant. I don't know if anyone's seen The Gentleman, but that is brilliant. So I'll go Notebook, The Gentleman. And I'd probably say Batman, The Joker one, which was Batman, The Dark Knight Rises.
Ooh,
that was
out. Brilliant.
Just because of the Heath Ledger role, really. That's the only reason I'm going for that. But they're in my top 10. I can't really say which one, you know. I'll give you those for three.
To be fair, George, we don't usually get that question on the podcast. So there we go, Scott.
That's quite sensible for Scott.
It is. And then he asks the next question.
Oh, right, okay.
Again, I mean, it's not too bad, actually, this from Scott. But, George, who would your top three guests, either dead or alive, would you invite to a dinner party?
Are you sure Scott's asked these questions?
I'm very sure. He messaged me on Instagram.
Okay. So, top three guests for a dinner party. Okay. Good question. I'd probably go, one would again be Heath Ledger. I think he's really inspirational, like an actor, and I think he'd be quite good. And then I'd go for, on the spot really, aren't I? I'd tell you.
How about an invitation for Scott?
I'm not inviting Scott. I've had dinner enough with him. Honestly, we lived together for a year, and that, you know, that was enough. No, I'm only joking, Scott. So two more guests. I'd probably go with Tiger Woods, 100%. I'm a golf fan, and I think just the way he's come back, even now, I suppose he just played with Charlie, his son, who looks really good. Talking about father and son combos, Charlie looks amazing, but obviously had so many difficulties with his back and the car crash and everything. So I'll go with Tiger Woods. Feel like that would be quite interesting. And Will Ferrell, definitely. I think that would be good to finish off. Interesting combo of those three, but...
Yeah, that's a very, very interesting combo.
It wouldn't be Scott, though. It wouldn't be Scott.
Scott doesn't make the cut, unfortunately.
No.
Three good guests. To be fair, very interesting as well. All of them. So I rate that. Funny you mentioned about living with Scott for a year, because this next question is from Ed Barnes, actually. One of the only Leicestershire players we haven't had on the podcast. So, Ed, if you're listening, get yourself on. We'll be in touch. But Ed's question is, how did you cope living with Scott Steele for an entire year?
Well, yeah, good question. I think, to be fair, we give him a... So I live with... He's rented a room. Well, we lived together for a good 15 months, I'd probably say. And he is great, to be fair. He's got a heart of gold. He just cannot cook. Probably not the best at cleaning. Although he brings a bit of entertainment, actually. More laughing at him than with him a little bit, I'd probably say. But he's... it's been an interesting year. I think a learning curve for myself and Scott, I'd probably say. He's probably been a little bit more cultured, and I've learnt a lot from him.
What have you learnt from Scott Steele? I'd love to know this.
I'll tell you a quick story, actually, because I was thinking about whether to tell this or not. If we were talking about Scott Steele, I'll probably tell it. So I thought I'll get him, you know, I'll do a great thing here. Let's get him cooking. Right, Scott, let's, you know, find a recipe you want. We'll both do it together. Trying to egg him on and see what happens. And he's just looking at the oven and he doesn't know what he's doing, like twisting knobs and opening it, closing. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, it says preheat the oven. I was like, right, okay. Well, I can't find this preheat button. Oh. I was like, what do you mean you can't find the preheat? Well, it says preheat the oven. How am I supposed to preheat it? Scott, you turn it on. That was one of the first cultured moments that I probably gifted the lad. No, but he's great. He is great. And we joke about it a lot. but he's a good housemate, caring and funny lad as well to be around, to be fair. So I'm sure he'll be listening at some point. So you owe me rent, Scott.
Honestly, I'll tell you what, in the future, George, we need to get you two on as a double act. He'll be like stepbrothers here on the podcast. That'd be absolutely fantastic entertainment. I bet you, have you got a lot more stories like that? Again, we can't put them all in tonight, but if you have, save them for that.
Yeah,
podcast.
I'm not sure how suitable they'll be though for a podcast, to be honest.
Okay, fair enough. That is something, but we'll see. We'll wait and see. But in terms of our last one, actually, of the Twitter questions, and this is from a former guest here at the podcast, and I must admit, a very, very interesting bloke with, again, a heart of gold, Mr. Callum Parkinson. Big up to Cal Parky. I was a little bit disappointed with the context of this, I'm going to be honest. I thought it involved like a seal sanctuary, you know, when I saw this question on Twitter. I was saddened to find out that it didn't have anything to do with the seals, as in animals, or even like, what is it? Is it from Aldi? I think a seal bar, it's like their knockoff version of a penguin.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
I thought it was something to do with something like that. Unfortunately, it isn't, but the question from Cal was, who has the biggest baby seals at Leicestershire? And George, if you could just give us the context of what quote-unquote baby seals are.
Oh, yeah. Well, I should have used your advice and just said something that we adopted some baby seals. But it is not anything like that. So we've got this running competition, myself and Cal. Strangely, we have really fat legs. And the baby seals come in. Is we have our skin folds test, really, which measures skin calipers test, which I'm sure every cricketer does. There's 8 sites on your body, and they pinch you and they tell you if you're fat and you need to run more or not eat as much or if you're okay. And weirdly, we've got pretty fat legs among our peers. So we have a competition as to who, and for what, I have no idea why we've called these baby seals, whether it's come from the S&C, Cal, or I don't know, but we have a baby seals competition as to who's got the fattest legs, and at the moment he's on the podium. He's probably got the silver medal. I'm just in front, and I want to say I'm not too sure who's third. Scott might be up there, you know, he's got a few baby seals on him. That's the context. Unfortunately, we haven't got any pet seals.
It's just the name, you know. It's such terrible, a strange isn't name, isn't it? Baby seal.
Terrible question, Callum.
Like, do they look like baby seals, I suppose, when you think of it with a seal's tail?
Well, Cal looks a bit like a seal without any hair, I suppose. Maybe that's why he brought it up. I don't really know.
That'd be who is the biggest baby seal, not who has the biggest baby seal.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe he's just got the gold then and I'm on silver.
Fair enough. And thank you again to all the Leicestershire players and Jay as well for getting your questions in. Much appreciated. And before we get on to our final question, George, which will, of course, detail the 2022 season, I'm not sure if you remember this, but we had Louis Kimber on the podcast a while ago. And in that particular podcast, you were one of the people who asked a Twitter question, and it was testing out Louis' trivia knowledge, University Challenge.
Oh, no. It's come back to haunt me.
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. Because in front of me, I asked 3 questions to Louis Kimber on that podcast. He did all right. I'm going to be honest. Louis actually performed quite well. But I've also got 3 questions for you, George, all trivia related. So let's see how you do, right, in this. Question number 1 of 3. What is the capital city of Iceland?
I hate capital cities. But I do know this. I think it's Reykjavik. No. Yeah, it is. No. Yeah, it is.
Final answer?
Yeah.
Very good. It is indeed Reykjavik. So that's 1 of 1, George. We'll get you on University Challenge in absolutely no time at this rate. But moving on to our second one. In which UK city was Chef Gordon Ramsay born?
Oh, good question. I don't know this. Good question. Is it a trick question?
No. He was born in the UK. In fact, fun fact about Gordon Ramsay, he had his childhood in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Really? Okay. Mm. Well, then, city, you say?
Yep.
I'd go Birmingham, then.
Final answer?
No, it's not my final answer. I'd go...
There's a there's a reason I said UK and not English. He moved from his place of birth, to Stratford upon Avon. I should have made that clear.
Let's go. Let's go with Cardiff, Wales.
It's actually Glasgow. He plays for Rangers, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I have no idea. Went from Glasgow to Stratford upon Avon, which is a. I can't say I've ever heard anyone make that journey, but you know, you've gone from Scotland to Shakespeare's County. Fair play to him. Good choice of county. If I might just say so, Gordon Ramsay, on the 0.00001% chance that he's listening. Big up to Gordon. But in terms of our final one, George, and this is the most pressing one, because this is about county cricket and it's about your current county. How many county championships have Leicestershire County Cricket Club won?
I think it's three.
You think correctly. It is three. Very, very good. Do you know the years?
I do, but no, off the top of my head. 290. No, I don't. 97? 97, I want to say.
97 was Glamorgan. 96,
maybe. 96. Is that right or not?
96 was. Yeah. Yeah. So the first one.
They won a couple, didn't they, within a few years? Because Nico talks about it all the time. 96, 95. No, 94, maybe. 94.
Both of those were Warwickshire. 94, 95.
Were they? Go on, tell me. I'm not sure. 96.
Correct. 1996 was correct. 97 was Glamorgan. 1998 was Leicestershire's second. So they won two in the space of three seasons. Very, very impressive. Darren Maddy went into a lot of detail actually on the podcast about that in our 50th episode. And the first one was in 1975. But fair play, George. I must admit, you walk the walk, you've taught the talk. Well done. Very, very good.
Three very different questions.
And hey, we have to have some variety on the podcast. Variety,
exactly.
The flavour of life. But George, we're almost at an end to today's podcast. And I must admit, I've just had a look at the time. Time has melted away. Been going for almost an hour and 20 minutes. But our final question of today's podcast revolves around the 2022 season. We're not that far now. In fact, the season starts on the 7th of April, 2022. I think I'm not alone in saying this. I think we're all very, very excited for county cricket to return in 2022. Ahead of this season, what are you looking to achieve from both a personal and a club perspective?
Yeah, good question. I think it would be great to get to finals day in T20 cricket as a club. I think that we've done, you know, we've got a great two overseas players now, like you mentioned earlier, Gurbaz, who everyone who I've spoken to, who've seen him firsthand, really does believe he's a world-class player. We've probably, hopefully, caught him at a good time in his career. And like I said, we had a really difficult game against Notts where we didn't quite make it to finals day. And it was just those close moments, in my experience, sort of being around it at Worcester as well, in a team where at a similar stage, we'd make a few sort of quarterfinals or get really close and not quite get over the line. And then all of a sudden win finals day and then win again or get to finals the next year. I think that could be on the horizon for Leicester. So really, just from T20 cricket, just getting a sniff at finals day would be a huge achievement. A quarterfinal would be great. I think that would be a good achievement at the stage we're at. And then in Championship cricket, I think we're showing glimpses of some great stuff. It would be great. I see why not, but great to win Div 2. We're probably not quite there on paper yet to do that, but we've definitely got the capability. And I think off the back of a few good seasons of some lads here and obviously like learning a few things here, tweaking a few things. Obviously we've got the addition of overseas players hopefully as well. So so we're close, but it'd be nice to see a lot of progression in four-day cricket. One-day cricket, I feel I could say the same thing about T20 cricket. But you know, we're kind of getting there in red and white ball. But I think for me as a club, that T20 quarterfinal is probably a natural progression with hopefully having a good season in Red Bull cricket. And personally, you know, it's just do the best I can, really. For me, I've not really been one to have so many goals per se. I want to average this or I want to score this many runs. I feel like as long as I've got these values that make me a better player, like work hard, you know, then and do the best I can, then hopefully it'll take care of itself. So that's really me. I've not really done anything different, I suppose, other than trying to learn the way I play over the last few years. But to get an opportunity early on and score some big runs would be great for me. And more importantly, you know, for us to win as a club, we're not far away. And I feel like, you know, we really could, after the next 2 years, year or two, some people might be talking slightly differently about Leicester and we'll be actually winning games rather than a team that can win games.
Well, George, it goes without saying, but myself and everyone here at the Counter Cricket Podcast, I know Joe and Lucy, would share these sentiments as well. We are all wishing both yourself and the club nothing but the best of luck heading into this season. 2022 has got the makings of such a fascinating county cricket year. It really has. We've got so many excellent overseas players coming in. Lots of good young talent. We've mentioned the likes of Rian Ahmed. You can see it in the Caribbean at the moment in the Under-19 World Cup. We are absolutely blessed at the moment to have a load of talented players in county cricket. So just my message to the listeners out there, if you can get down to your county, even if it's not your local one, let's say you're on holiday somewhere in the country and there's a county cricket game going on, just support the counties. You know, I can't really say much more. It's fantastic. The standard is very, very good. You get some great games. And the people involved in county cricket, I can say this now, having interviewed 100 plus players, yourself included, George, the people involved in county cricket are decent people. You know, you don't have egos. You don't think it's all about yourself. You're very, very, very nice people. And honestly, just George, one final thing from me. Thank you very much for coming on tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure. You know, the amount of messages we've received over the last few months, I can see why. It has been an absolutely brilliant podcast, and you are always welcome back here on the Counter Cricket
Podcast.
Thanks,
Aaron. I appreciate your time and inviting me on, obviously. Thank you.
My pleasure, mate. Always welcome back on as well in the future. But George, before we say our final goodbyes then for tonight's episode, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, Leicestershire membership, anything like that?
Well, of course, yeah, of course, things like that. I mean, just to echo what you said, really, like, you know, we're at an interesting stage, I think, as a country, county cricket, especially. There's, you know, players obviously at the highest level. England are probably, I suppose, under pressure at the moment. And there's a lot of questions being asked about the county game and how that can benefit international cricket. But, you know, if that isn't really something to try and support your counties and go down, it's actually... you know, there are a lot of traditions and a lot of, like we've spoken about, family run clubs that really do mean a lot to a lot of people. So without really plugging memberships or things like that, just get down, support the club, and you'll probably, you know, end up enjoying it, really, and being inspired, like I suppose yourself has and other future county cricketers will be. So yeah, no, just like you said, really echo that. Get down and support the game.
100%. And what a game it is. I mean, I've been watching it since 2008, my first ever Warwickshire game, 2009. And here we are, 2022. The love, if anything, has just grown even more. It's a fantastic game, a fantastic circuit. And again, just one final thing, support the counties. That's all that we have to say. But George, that is pretty much it for tonight's episode of the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. I imagine the listeners will have loved it as well. I certainly have. It's been a fascinating conversation, to say the least. But to all of our wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in to tonight's episode. And as always, guys, we will see you on the next one.